Well, good morning again. As I said earlier, it's good to see everyone here today. We are continuing our series on Hebrews chapter 11. And we're thinking about how the great cloud of witnesses in the Old Testament, those great people of faith, lived their lives before God. And it is those people of faith, that today, even though they are dead, their faith still speaks. And that's what we're looking at, is how their faith can encourage us today. And the person that we're thinking about today as we move through Hebrews 11, as I was growing up, the only thing that I knew about this person was that he was some kind of father, and at Vacation Bible School, for some reason, him being Father Abraham meant that we had to wave our arms around, flap our legs, move our head, and look ridiculous. And so I only knew that Father Abraham meant that we needed to act like a crazy person. And even though that song is just a fun one for the kids to sing at Vacation Bible School, I do think there is an important truth to that song, that Abraham, as the father of Israel, as the patriarch whom God called to bless all the families of the earth through his descendants, he, in a sense, is our father, in that Jesus was the Messiah of the Jews. And as people who follow Jesus, Paul would say in Galatians 3 that we are heirs of the promise to Abraham and that we are also sons of Abraham. Abraham is an incredibly significant character in the Bible. In fact, Abram, or his later addition to his name, Abraham, is mentioned 312 times in the Bible. And there are entire chapters in the New Testament, like Romans 4 and Galatians 3, that are devoted to the character of Abraham. And the reason that we're talking about Abraham today is that in the passage that we're studying, Hebrews 11, verses 8 through 10, the Hebrew writer looks at the life of Abraham. So let's read that text now. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. And by faith, he went to live in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. This is what Hebrews 11 has to say about Abraham. Now, when we think back to Abraham's life, Abraham did several great things, one of which was when God told Abraham to take his son and sacrifice him. Abraham obeyed, and he even got to the point where he had the knife raised and he was ready to go, and the Lord stopped him. But in Hebrews 11, even though there are several great stories that you could look at in Abraham's life, in Hebrews 11, the focus is on Abraham's journey, about God calling Abraham and Abraham not knowing where he was going but following God. And so it's that journey that we're going to focus on in our sermon today. And to do this, we have to go back to Genesis 11 and 12. Genesis 11 and 12. Now, when we look at this map, I want us to see what this is talking about. In Genesis 11, at the end of Genesis chapter 11, Genesis 11 is about the Tower of Babel. So at the end of chapter 11, it's mentioning so-and-so begat so-and-so, those genealogies that we talked about last Sunday. But it's talking about some genealogy, and it mentions Terah. And Terah is the father of Abraham. And Terah and his family, all of Abraham's family, his father and his family before that, lived all the way down here in this red circle in the city of Ur of the Chaldeans. Now, in the New Testament, in the Old Testament, when you read the phrase Chaldeans, it becomes almost synonymous with Babylonians. So when you read here at the end of Genesis 11, Abram's family were from Ur of the Chaldeans. And so read Ur in Babylonia. So all the way down here in this major city, this important city in the nation of Babylonia thousands of years ago. Now, just from knowing that Abram's family lived in Ur of the Chaldeans, I want you to think about this. This was long before Moses. This was long before there was a law. This was long before there was a temple. This was long before there was anything like we read about in the Old Testament. We've got to go back thousands of years to get to Abram. And in fact, do you know what this means? This means that Abram and his family were polytheists. They worshipped many gods. You couldn't have lived in Ur. You couldn't have lived in Babylonia and have said, oh, there's only one God out there. That didn't exist yet. God hadn't called Abraham. People were not thinking that. And so just that we learn that Abram and his family were from Ur of the Chaldeans, they were polytheists. Okay? Now, if you don't believe me, if you think that maybe I'm making that up, it's kind of hard to think about Father Abraham worshiping the sun god and the moon god and all these things. Look at what it says in Joshua 24:2. Joshua said to all the people, "Thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, long ago your fathers lived beyond the Euphrates." Here we're talking about Babylon. "And they lived beyond the Euphrates, Terah, the father of Abraham and Nahor, and they served other gods." Before God called Abram, they were polytheists. They lived in Ur of the Chaldeans, and they worshipped the Babylonian gods. And so this puts a little bit into perspective when God calls Abram. When God calls Abram and says, "I am the one God, I am the Lord," and Abram goes, "Okay, I believe it. I'll go with you." That was a huge act of faith on Abram's part, knowing what we know about where he came from. The ancient city of Ur of the Chaldeans, this may amaze you. Are you ready for this? There are still some ruins today that exist from the ancient city of Ur that would have been there when Abraham was alive. Now we're talking 4,000 plus years ago. Imagine that. 4,000 years ago, you could still go there today. I believe it's in the modern nation of Iraq, so I'm sure none of you would want to go there today. But you could go there today and see some things that are still standing. There are temples to ancient gods that are still standing there. But I want you to see this. This is called the ziggurat. Ziggurat is a word that means temple. And this has been reconstructed, but the original foundations and stones were all there. Now, do you know what most people think that this is? You can still go there today and see this. You know what most people think this is? The Tower of Babel. Now, the ziggurat is in Ur of the Babylonians, and it's called the Tower of Babel. Does Babel sound Babylonians? You hear the reference there? This could be the Tower of Babylon. If it's not the Tower of Babel, the Tower of Babel would have been something like this. So imagine, see this grand staircase. Imagine standing at the bottom of that staircase and looking up. Look how high that is. Now, what does Genesis 11 say? "Let us build a tower, a city, and a tower with its top in the heavens." Does this put a little visual then with what the Tower of Babel may have been like? This was an ancient temple in the city of Ur, the Tower of Babel. Now, this is what links Genesis 11 and Genesis 12. Genesis 11 is about the Tower of Babel, and then we all of a sudden, out of nowhere, start learning about this family that lives in Ur. You know why? The link is that in Genesis 11, it's about the Tower of Babel, and Genesis 12 starts telling us about this guy whose family used to worship at the Tower of Babel, Abraham, Terah, and his family. That's the link that links these stories together. Genesis 11, Tower of Babel, happening in Babylon in a city like Ur, and then we learn that this family from that city, they become the main characters then in the story from Genesis 12 on. So as we read, Terah, the patriarch of the family, Abram's father, he decides that it's time for the family to move. And so he moves the family all the way down here from Ur up to Haran. And they move up to Haran. And you might go, well, why in the world would Terah move his family so far away? About 700 miles, in fact, Terah moved his family. But one of the things that we know about Haran was that in the ancient world, it was a major, major city. One of the reasons is that all of this down here is Arabian desert, and you don't want to travel through the desert. So they had major roads that people would travel on. If you were coming from Assyria, you had to go through Haran. If you were coming down here to Egypt, or coming from Egypt, you had to go through Haran. If you were coming from Babylonia, or going to the west, you had to go through Haran. This was a major city, so for Terah to move his family there, this was probably a smart business move for his family. All people in the ancient world would have had to travel through this city, and so they moved there. And so Abram and his family are now living in Haran. And this is where, it's in Haran, that God comes to Abram and says, I want you to pack up all your stuff and I want you to move. I want you to go to a place that I'm telling you, and you have no idea where I'm telling you to go, but I just want you to have faith and follow me. Probably Abram had it made. For his family to be able to move 700 miles and to live in a major commercial center like that, Abram was probably living a comfortable life. While Terah was alive, he was part of the household, he was working, they were living in a major city, they probably had a home, a comfortable home that Abram lived in, and God comes to Abram and says, I want you to pack up everything and move 400 miles south. I want you to follow me. And so he does that. So he's already traveled all the way up from Ur to Haran, and now God's telling him to get on the move again, this time without his family. And so he's moving down to the south 400 miles. And I want us to, just for the next couple of moments, think about this journey, this 400-mile journey, and this promise that God was telling him. First of all, as I've already mentioned, it was long. He had already traveled 700 miles from Ur all the way up to Haran, and now he's being called to travel another 400 miles. This is 1,100 miles in the ancient world. And so you don't just get in a car or hop on a plane and fly, do you? You've got to travel. So I did a little investigating on MapQuest today. And to put this into perspective, I put in the church address, 701 South Main Street. If we were to make a comparable journey from Haran to Canaan, where he ended up, about 400 miles, that would be like you picking up from this building and walking to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And that's just the second leg. If we were to take the entire journey that he ends up making all the way from Ur to Haran and then down, that would be like you walking from this building to Denver, Colorado. That's the length of the journey that Abraham was called to go on. So the first thing we see about the journey was, it was long. This was not just God asking Abram, hey, pick up and just go a couple houses down. This is God asking Abram to take a major step of faith and leave everything that he knew and leave the comfortable life that he was living. Secondly, it was dangerous. Can you imagine? I don't know if you've noticed, but lately there's been a lot of terrorist attacks, right? We live in 2017 with the most sophisticated technology on the face of the planet, and even today, traveling is still hazardous, isn't it? Now, let's go back 4,000 years and think about making a trip like that. You don't just get on your camel and take an easy stroll for 1,100 miles without encountering road robbers, right? Without encountering the elements, the heat, all of those things that might be involved. God wasn't just asking Abram to do something easy. This was an extremely long journey, and it was extremely dangerous for Abram to make this journey. And then let me just tell you this. It was disappointing. When you read Genesis chapter 12, I want us to notice something there, that God tells Abram, I'm going to give this land to your offspring. Abram didn't get to experience owning the land. Think about that. He was told to go there, but he didn't actually get to own any of the land. And then Abram had lived in two major commercial centers. He had lived in Ur of the Chaldeans, a major Babylonian city. Then he had lived in Haran, a major city at the crossroads of the ancient world. And now he's called to go to a desert and live in a tent. We want you to give up your life of comfort and go down to this desert and live in a tent. Disappointing promise. And the other thing is that in Genesis chapter 12 and verse 10, Once Abram gets to the land, he finds out there's a famine and there's no food. What a welcome, right? I want you to go to this land that I'm promising, and when you get there, there won't be anything to eat. So then you're going to have to go down to Egypt and get food. Think about that. This was a disappointing promise, I think, at times for Abram. And then this was hostile. Can you imagine if Abram, there were already people living in Canaan. We call them Canaanites, right? So can you imagine this crazy guy riding in on a camel and saying, "Hey, I just wanted you all to know, God told me that your land is mine." What do you think would have happened? Right? So when Abram was entering the land, it wasn't like there was nobody there and he got to carry the American flag on the moon and plant it for the first time and claim it as his own. There were already people there, and they would not have responded kindly to this guy walking in and saying, "Hey, by the way, there's only one God. I know you worship a million, but there's only one, and he's told me I can have this land." They're going to say, "You're crazy," and kill him. He walked into a hostile environment. And I want the last point here is that he was helpless. Abram is one guy. There are Canaanites living in the land. Abram has no right to the land. He has no way to come in and say, "Hey, I have a right to this land." He has no right to it other than the promise of God. And he has no means to take it. He doesn't take an army with him. He doesn't have the material wealth to buy the land. So Abram has no right and he has no means to be able to take this land. I hope that this list helps put into perspective the faith that Abram must have had to follow the promise of God. God says, "Go to a land that I'm going to show you." And what I want you to see is this was incredibly difficult. And if it had been me, or if probably it had been you, we would have said, I'm out of here. I'm not traveling by myself to a hostile environment, to a desert. I'm not leaving the comfort of my own home to go face these hostile people and look like a crazy person in a land where I've got to live in a tent and experience famine, in a land that I have no rights or no means to claim as my own. For Abram to go, it would have been an incredible act of faith. He left a bustling city like Haran to be a wandering, tent-dwelling nomad in the desert. And you want to hear the other sad part? When we get to Genesis 23, how much land between... This is a trick question. How much land between Genesis 12 and Genesis 23 did Abram own? When Sarah dies, he has to go to the sons of Heth and beg them just for a little plot of land so he can bury his own wife. Now remember, when God told him to go, he said, "I'm going to go to this land that I'm telling you." And by Genesis 23, when his wife dies, he doesn't own anything in the land. He doesn't even have a little patch big enough to bury his wife. And he has to buy that plot from somebody else that already lived in the land. And at the end of his own life, the only land that he actually owned was that little burial plot that he and his wife were buried on. That was the only amount of land. And he gave up everything to go to a land that he would never actually end up owning or possessing in any meaningful sense of that word. But when the Hebrews writer was looking at this journey and was looking at Abraham, he found Abram's faith to be significant in the journey. Abram obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. And by faith, he went to live in the land of promise as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. The journey of faith that Abram made, I think, is similar to ours. When we look at our faith, it's also like a journey. And I don't know whoever came up with this idea, but if you look at any and every major character of faith in the Bible, their walk of faith was difficult, not easy. And so if anyone's ever given you the impression that the Christian life is easy, they were wrong and they misled you. we look at Abraham, who is the prototypical example of what it looks like to have faith, and look at the journey that he made. He was helpless. It was long. It was dangerous. He often didn't feel like he had the means to be able to do it. He didn't even know where he was going, and he was asked to give up a comfortable life in a large city to go live in a tent in the desert. That characterized his journey of faith, and yet it was his faith on that journey for which he received mention in Hebrews chapter 11. Many times, I think our Christian walk with God looks more like the journey of Abraham than it does what you might hear people talk about as being something that's being easy. It's something that we have to work at. It's something that's a struggle. We just have to keep going and keep following God and God's instructions. And at the end of Abram's story, at the end of Abraham's life, he didn't even own any land. All that he had was a little burial plot for himself and his wife. He didn't get to see the days of the full promise that God had made. It was his sons and his sons' sons and his descendants that were the ones who inherited the land. But in Abram's life, in Abraham's life, he didn't get to see those things. It doesn't matter where you are in life today. There are some people in this room that are going through difficult things in life. Things that have happened to some people in this room in their past have been terrible. You may be in financial trouble. You may be in relationship trouble. Whatever it might be, your story doesn't have to be a sad one. It should be one where every day, no matter where you are in life, no matter what your walk and journey of faith is, you are seeking to walk and journey and have faith in God. Maybe your walk feels long, disappointing, dangerous, filled with hostility, and maybe sometimes you just feel helpless. Today, we take hope that one of the primary fathers of the faithful, one of the primary heroes of faith, Abraham himself, experienced this in his journey of faith. And I tell you today that you can also be a person of great faith, no matter what your journey in this life is. Today, if you need to become a Christian and you want to be baptized into the name of Jesus Christ, I can't promise it will be easy, but I can promise it will be rewarding. And you have to have the perspective that you're looking beyond the current situation to the situation that is to come, that will be provided by God, who will bring about a city that He has designed specifically for us. That's the kind of faith that Abraham had. And today it's the kind of faith that I call us all to. If you need to respond, if you need prayers of the church, please don't leave today without speaking to me, or you can come now as we stand and as we sing.